let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central. Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go, go, go.
This is Sports Central. On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Thank God for caffeine. They invented it for days like this when you have to stay up till 1:30 in the morning to watch the US beat Canada and then wake up again at 5 a.m. to watch US beat Canada again at their two sports. That feels pretty good. America beating Canada in hockey and curling. That's their sports. They should be beating the United States, and probably in both of those games, the United States was the underdog, and it was a lot of fun last night. And that is where we're going to start today's episode of Sports Central. My name is Adam Hogue. It is Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. Our phone number, 312-235-2525. If you've missed any of our shows, including yesterday's, White Sox general manager Rick Hahn was on the program. Go back, find it on iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search WGN Sports Central. Of course, it's also available on our website, WGNRadio.com. But if you enjoy the show, please check it out, download it, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and please rate and review it if you don't mind. We appreciate you doing that. Help spread the word. But let's jump in with today's lead.
We go round by round. Jocelyn Lamoureux, two goals apiece in the shootout. Lamoureux moving in on Zabinas. She beats and scores!
Oh my gosh. That's electrifying. That's as good as you're going to see anywhere.
Great move, great hands, great deception. Finding the hole right there. We saw her take a shootout earlier in this tournament, unable to capitalize. Makes it count today.
Megan Augusta. She scored earlier. Must beat Mooney to keep Canada's hopes alive. She is stuck! The United States wins gold in Pyeongchang!
So, Joe, I know you stayed up all night. You just said, screw sleeping. I don't care that Steve Cochran's on at 6 a.m. You watched the whole thing. Here's the thing. I went to bed, or I tried to go to bed. I didn't know. Here's the one thing, and I've said this a few times over the last few days with the Olympics. I think NBC's coverage, for the most part, is very good. They're covering a lot of sports with a lot of different people all over a foreign country. They don't do a good enough job of explaining how these things work. And maybe I missed it, but I didn't hear Kenny Albert explain the overtime, leading into, the end of the game. And so I was a little caught off guard, because the other night when the U.S. was in overtime, that was the U.S. game, right? One of the games was in overtime, and they went straight to a 10-minute sudden death deal, and then the shootout. And apparently the gold medal in the women is longer, so they actually had an intermission for 20 minutes. So then I didn't know from there, is it like the NHL where you just keep playing 20 minutes? That's how it should be, frankly, in an elimination game or, you don't need shootouts.
Yeah, if you're handing out silverware, there's no way you can end with a shootout.
Right. And my stance on shootouts has been pretty consistent. They're fun. I enjoy watching them. When it's over, you're kind of like, I don't know if that was fair. And that last night was no different. USA beating Canada in the shootout. It was very entertaining. And that goal from Jocelyn Lamoureux. By the way, I feel like everyone in this game was named Jocelyn. On both teams.
Popular name.
I called WCHA men's hockey a decade ago. And all the names are the same. As I'm watching this game last night, they must be the siblings of all the players I called. Like North Dakota and all these random schools. Minnesota Duluth. But Lamoureux. There was Turnbull. There was all Kessel, which I think is Phil Kessel's sister.
Well, the school that you went to, the Burrishes were the captains of the male and the female team, right? The men's and women's team.
And there were 9 Badgers in that game last night between Canada and the U.S.
Am I supposed to be impressed? Or?
Yes. You are. Hillary Knight being one of them. I interviewed Hillary Knight 10 years ago. So, name drop. So I tried to go to, anyway, I tried to go to bed because I didn't know that there was going to be an intermission, and I was like, I'm really tired. And so when they said intermission, I'm like, all right, I'm going to bed. Sorry. And I go up there, I get ready, and by the time I actually got into bed, I got the notification on my phone that was like, all right, overtime starting. And I'm like, all right, I'll go watch it. But again, in overtime, I didn't know, like, is this going to go to a second overtime, or is there going to be a shootout? So I was actually relieved when it went through the whole overtime and there was a shootout, because I was like, all right, I got to go to bed. But it was very entertaining, and the goal from Jocelyn Lamoureux, Canada actually had a really nice goal, too, in this thing. But this was like, if Patrick Kane had done this move, it would have been number one on SportsCenter. It would have been one of the best goals of the year. Like, that's how good this goal was. Find the video and the highlights if you haven't seen it. Because she completely juked the Canadian goaltender. So it was really exciting. I guess the name, I don't know if you saw this, Joe, there's actually a name for that move that she made on the game winner, called Oops, I Did It Again.
Classic.
Classic Brittany. But there was a little, I don't know if it's controversy or not, I didn't even see this until this morning, but Jocelyn LaRocq, hoping that's how you say her last name, another Jocelyn, everybody's named Jocelyn, she's on the Canadian team. These medal ceremonies after the gold silver game, and then they like awkwardly bring out the team that won the bronze earlier. They're not, you know, they're in their jerseys but not gear, and they're happy because they just won a game. They're happy to get a medal. It's always awkward because you have two teams out there that are happy, and then you have one team that is crushed. And in this case, being the Canadians, and we've known for weeks that it was going to be the U.S. versus Canada in the women's final, and this has become a great rivalry. And Canada had won four straight golds. So it was a huge win for the U.S. and a crushing loss for Canada. And you understand them being upset. So Jocelyn LaRocq, they're going down the line. They put the medals over each one of their heads. She immediately, you know, she accepted the medal. And then as soon as the person stepped aside, she took it right off. And a lot of people were saying,
kind of stared into the camera.
Yeah. But a lot of people saying, calling her a sore loser. Here's what I'll say. I don't think it's a good look, what she did, but I understand it. When you hear like the NHL players talk about being in the Olympics, they love it. But most of them still say the Stanley Cup is, you know, what they're playing for. Women's hockey, this is their Super Bowl.
Yeah, this is the pinnacle.
This is everything. And not getting the gold is crushing. So, especially when this week's, the whole week tournament, 2 week tournament leads up to this one game, and you kind of knew it was coming the whole time, and then you lose in a shootout. So I understand being upset. Like if she had not accepted the medal to begin with, that I would have had more of a problem with it than that. But this is today's poll question, our Sports Central poll question. You can find at Adam Hoge, H-O-G-E, on Twitter. We'll have Joe update the results here in a second, because I haven't checked it. I tweeted it out a little bit before the show. But this was pretty cool. I mean, good way to go to bed, USA being Canada. And also, by the way, I was just impressed with how many people had stayed up and watched this thing. I mean, all the normal people I see on Twitter, you know, for a Blackhawks game or, you know, really anything, even NFL, everyone was staying up, and it was entertaining. It's interesting watching women's hockey that where you're not allowed to check. It's a completely different game. It reminded me of actually playing the NHL video game. Granted, you're allowed to check, but you know, like if you press the one button on defense anytime you get anywhere near
the poke check,
a guy, you just like automatically get the puck. That's what it seemed like watching this game last night. Like up and down, turnover after turnover. And it wasn't necessarily that it was bad, but because there was no checking, you had to hit that button to poke check the puck away. And a lot of times they're so skilled at doing it that's how it played out.
Maybe stick lift. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I haven't played NHL, EA Sports NHL in a few years.
Yeah. Do you have the poll results yet?
Yeah, I sure do. In the early stages of voting, we have 57% saying no. It is not...
So it's a little polarizing, but I got some responses right away after I posted this. Alex Quigley, our old friend here from WGN, said, I don't really see a problem with it at all. And then he said, I see it as self-disappointment. She didn't refuse the medal. She didn't act unsportsmanlike to U.S. players afterwards, unless I missed something. I would love it if a U.S. player did that. That's where I want to, that's the perspective I kind of want to take here. It was like, how would I feel about it if it was the U.S. person? I think a lot of people jumped on this because it was a Canadian. I don't know that I agree that I would like it if the U.S. player did the same thing. I would prefer that you accept the medal and be grateful. I mean, silver medal. You see most of these other sports, like these guys are thrilled just to get on the podium. Like Lindsey Vonn got a bronze the other night. This is a former gold medalist, and she was... Everyone's different. I think Shaun White, we talked about him last week. If he had not gotten the gold in snowboarding, he probably would have been upset. But, yeah, I understand it.
It's difficult to compare other non-Olympic sports. You know, like you don't see the... after the Super Bowl, them handing the banner to the Patriots, hey, like, runner-up, good job. Because what would Tommy do with that? He'd pass it off. What are you going to do with the second-place thing? Especially, like, they're still in their pads. Like, it's not...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not like they're coming back the next day like, okay, we lost, but, you know, let's do this with honor. They're still sweating from the game.
If you're not first, you're last. The Olympics are just different. I mean... But it is an interesting dynamic in these gold medal games where the loser is less happy than the team that comes in third. We'll talk to Mark Carman here in a moment. He was at Bulls shoot around this morning. Bulls getting ready to play 76ers. And Mike Heller from the Mike Heller Show in Wisconsin will join us in a little bit. Northwestern playing Wisconsin tonight. I also want to check in with him on the Brewers and how legit they are as a rival to the Cubs. So we'll talk a little bit of baseball with him as well. Carm coming up here in a couple minutes. So the hockey game last night was great. Then you wake up early today and you have the U.S. playing Canada in curling. And going into this game, guaranteed a shot to play for at least a bronze medal. This is the semifinals. They had just beaten Canada a few days ago, the first time the U.S. had ever beaten Canada in the men's curling in the Olympics. And they got it done again. And John Schuster, who's the skip of the men's curling team, really struggled in Sochi. And was really struggling early in this tournament. What's remarkable about this story, and I realize not a lot of people are following what's going on with the curling, but this team was 2-4 after six games. And it looked like they were completely out of it. And they won their last three to get into the semifinals and then beat Canada. And now they're going to be playing for the gold. And it's funny how this sport works, because I'm telling you, the 10th end today, it was early this morning, the 10th end, and... It was a relatively easy shot to win, but if Schuster had missed it, Canada would have won. And it's like, it's curling, but you're sitting there, and it was incredibly nerve-wracking. But he made the shot, and it was, you know, just a cool, like, not even 12 hours. What was this? Like, when I went to bed, it was like the curling was starting in 4 hours. So we're talking about a six-hour difference here. And the U.S. taking down Canada in their two sports that they, you know, pride themselves in, hockey and curling. JP was on the show the other day talking about how when he was in the Canadian Football League, he would go to random bars and there'd just be curling on. And he's like, what is this? So the U.S. will take on Sweden in the gold medal game in curling. It's tomorrow night into Saturday morning is technically 12:30 a.m. Saturday, so you'll have to stay up late to watch it, but it's a Friday night. You can do it. We got Carm on the phone now?
Yes, indeed.
Hey, buddy, did you get up early this morning to watch curling?
You know, I didn't, Adam, but I respect those who do. Way to embrace the Olympics, way to embrace curling, way to embrace athletes that put everything in their life into this moment in time. I did interview, I believe his name is John Schuster from Minneapolis, who's a big curler. Is that correct?
Yes. He was the guy I was just talking about. He made the big shot, big shot this morning to beat Canada. Big moment.
Well, I want to take credit for that because I interviewed him about a month ago as he was getting ready, and I think I thought his focus was a little bit off, and I altered it, and today is because of me. Thank you.
Well, I can respect that because I'm taking credit for the U.S. women's hockey team beating Canada because I interviewed Hillary Knight 10 years ago at Wisconsin.
There you go. See, you and Hillary Knight painted a vision for what today would be unknowingly, but you did it, and that's huge.
All right, see? Okay, we're in agreement on this. So we are responsible for all the U.S. success over Canada. It's decided. All right.
Yes, we should get honorary medal.
Now, do you have any say over the Chicago Bulls' success? Because, if they weren't already tanking, it sure seems like they're going. I mean, Robin Lopez isn't even going to play tonight, right?
No, Robin Lopez will not start, will not play. For the first time all season, one of three Bulls who started every game.
How did they justify that?
Well, they justify it by it's part of the process, and we want to see Cristiano Felicio, and Cristiano's a young player now. Robin Lopez is 29 in the prime of his career. Felicio's 25. It's not like they're playing some 35-year-old player, but that's how they're justifying it, right or wrong. And they're not making the playoffs. They want to know what they have in Felicio. I could argue with you, Adam, that no one is taking Cristiano Felicio's contract. So why not make the guy earn his minutes? But they're just going to throw him a bone here because it really doesn't matter right now.
I mean, he has been a huge disappointment this year. Is there any thinking that, all right, well, maybe he'll look better and he can become a piece that maybe you can move in the offseason?
Well, they liked him as a rotational player enough to give him a four-year deal for $32 million, which isn't a ton of money in NBA terms, but that's a fairly sizable commitment. I think the thing with – and I still think they believe that there's something there, but Cristiano Felicio, I think, it just seems to me at least like he got a whole lot of money and was like, whoa, is that really my paycheck? And just – is not as focused, as committed once he got the big NBA payday. Now, maybe being back in the lineup, that'll change. But, I liked Felicio last year. Energy guy off the bench, rebound, go to the rim, dunk the basketball. To me, he was a viable part, but this season's been a disaster.
Mark Carman on Sports Central right now. Follow him at the Carm. Now, you went to shoot around this morning?
I did. I went out there and wanted to talk to Ben Simmons because the Sixers are in town, and that's your rookie of the year, and he's also tweeting out pictures on Instagram of LeBron James and himself and talking about free agency this summer and LeBron possibly coming to Philly, which is the new hot rumor.
Wow.
Pair up with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. So I talked to Ben, who did, in fact, verify that he believes that he should be the rookie of the year. Donovan Mitchell's a great candidate in Utah as well. And he also said that he was just playing around with his Instagram, nothing serious, but that he, of course, would love to play with LeBron.
Yeah, who wouldn't? How much...
Right.
How much... look, what the Bulls are doing is clearly tanking right now. There's no question. But, you see Mark Cuban get fined for openly talking about tanking, so they're not going to openly admit it. 76ers went on a similar plan recently. Seemed like it sure took a long time. What can be taken away from what the 76ers had done in recent years and applied to the Bulls?
Well, I mean, the 76ers went pure tank. I mean, they were just throwing randos out there like T.J. McConnell and Robert Covington, this Chicago guy out of Proviso East, who actually was like the one guy that actually turned into a viable player. And the Bulls, you know, there's, I mean, they traded Jimmy Butler for three viable parts. You know, if those guys, if Zach LaVine had been healthy this year and those three were all playing, I mean, and they hadn't traded Nico, that team to me is like they're challenging to be a 500 club. So, I mean, the Bulls, I just think the Bulls sort of did more of like a fast-track rebuild than an actual tank job, where they're literally, where teams are just trying to lose and put out their worst players because they have nothing in the tank. But the Bulls have some nice pieces, so I don't actually consider the Bulls to be quote-unquote tanking. It's more of a traditional rebuild to me.
How much do we really have to see Cam Payne play? Because that's the thing that's supposedly happening here.
Yeah, no, Cam Payne's going to play. You know, it was interesting. Fred Hoiberg said today, Adam, he said that last year when they were playing the Celtics in the playoffs, and if you remember, you know, they went up 2-0 before Rajon Rondo, you know, fractured his thumb, and then Boston won 4 in a row. But apparently, Cam Payne was Isaiah Thomas in practice, and he was incredible, supposedly. So Fred Hoiberg, I think he's just trying to be nice and all, but we're super excited to see Cam Payne, because last year in the playoffs, when we were practicing and we were trying to simulate what the Celtics did, he was amazing as Isaiah Thomas. So, you know, Isaiah Thomas was an MVP candidate last year. So you put that all together, expect Cam Payne to be an MVP candidate-worthy player off the bench tonight.
Tim Tebow was an outstanding scout team quarterback.
Exactly. But, you know, they traded Taj and Doug McDermott for this guy. You know.
One of the all-time great Bulls trades.
Right. I mean, and at the time, you know, everyone was saying, you know, we really liked Cam in the draft. And I'm like, yeah, you really liked Doug McDermott in the draft, too. That doesn't mean you were right. Why don't you like, bury that thought process and not let anyone know that you liked Cam Payne in the draft? That's nothing to bring about and go trade for the guy when he proved that he sucks in Oklahoma City, for lack of a better word. But, you know, the Bulls thought that maybe he'd be a viable piece, and they were willing to give up on Doug McDermott, and they weren't re-signing Taj.
And Chris Dunn
hasn't worked out, obviously.
Chris Dunn's good to go.
Chris Dunn is good to go and makes the Bulls worth watching. That's the thing right now with the Bulls that makes them worth watching. You've got Dunn, you've got LaVine, you've got Markkanen. So really, like, who else is on the court? Who cares? I mean, those are the three guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, okay, Felicio's going to start and Lopez is not going to play. Don't care. Justin Holliday's going to come off the bench and they're starting Nwaba. David Nwaba's 25. Justin Holliday's 28. Justin Holliday's under contract next year. He'll be here most likely. I don't care. I actually like David Nwaba as a player more than I like Justin Holliday. The guy plays both ends. So, you know, these guys are still going out there trying to win basketball games. They're not, you know, back to the tanking thing. They're going to try to beat the Philadelphia 76ers tonight, and they very well might.
But there's still something that seems squirmy about Robin Lopez, a veteran, a pretty solid veteran who works his butt off and, you know, does his job pretty much every single game. Now he's just got to sit on the bench. I mean, that's not very rewarding for a guy who probably deserves better in this situation.
Right, I agree. But they also added Noah Vonleh, the Indiana product, who's a 6'10", and he's a power forward. But he can also play center the way the NBA goes about playing bigs nowadays. So they want to see him play off the bench. So he's going to get minutes, which is why Lopez is not even getting any backup minutes. And Omer, by the way, Omer Asik back on the squad is not active tonight, and he's perfectly healthy. So
I totally forgot they traded for him.
Yeah, Omer is around, but he won't be in uniform tonight, which is too bad for Omer.
And no,
Omer fans, perhaps.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and nobody else. All right, so there's 25 games here. What's the Bulls' record going to be in these last 25? Because you bring up the fact, I mean, Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen are all finally playing together. They're not going to be horrendous.
No, I expect the Bulls to play 500 basketball or close to it the rest of the way. That would be my guess. So what would that put them in? They are not winning the tanking war. There are way too many teams that are way worse than the Bulls. No chance. And Fred's going to coach to win. This is not going to be like the true tank. There's just too many. Zach LaVine's playing pretty good basketball. Chris Dunn has had a borderline breakout year. Probably not even borderline. Just the fact that he just got hurt, so he kind of have lost momentum there. But that guy's been he's had some huge games for him. And Markkanen's been consistent. So I mean, I expect them to win games here down the stretch.
What's the ticket market like right now? I mean, is it a good opportunity for Bulls fans to get out and see the young kids, or is it still too expensive?
That's a bad job by me. I have not looked today what the prices are, mainly because I'll be at Northwestern in Wisconsin tonight, senior night at Allstate Arena, and I expect to be weeping at about 8:15 when they bring Bryant McIntosh out for the final time, along with Scotty Lindsey and Gavin Skelly, which is going to be a bittersweet moment for Wildcats fans and a disappointing season as we segue for a second, I'm sorry, to Northwestern hoop.
That's fine. I'll be there tonight. Not the Bulls game, but Northwestern, Wisconsin. I'll be there.
Okay. It's tickets are readily available for that one. I did look. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the first. It's just a bad night for Northwestern because this is the first game that went to the tournament. They should be celebrated. Even though they've only won six games in the Big Ten and are not even going to make the NIT. But no one's coming out tonight, judging by what I'm seeing online, which is too bad.
Well, the Hoke family will be out there repping. In fact, we have a special guest at Sports Central today. Richard Hoge is actually here in the building, Mark Carmen. He is currently sporting a Wisconsin jacket, winter coat, with a Northwestern hat.
Yes. I love that. Your dad's the best. One of the great sports fans in the city, and the fact that he's repping both sides is beautiful. I know that you do the same. Of course, your loyalty, despite being a Wisconsin grad, Adam, I hold your loyalty to Northwestern because that's where you were as a kid, and that's who signs a lot of your checks.
Exactly. Very well said. All right, Carm. I appreciate you jumping on here, and we'll talk soon.
Always my pleasure, Adam Hoge. You have a great show, brother.
All right, appreciate it. Mark Carmen jumping on to talk some Bulls with us today on Sports Central. We'll take a quick timeout. Speaking of Northwestern Wisconsin, Mike Heller, who you've probably seen him. He fills in for Dan Patrick all the time. He hosts a radio show up in Wisconsin. This is first time we've had him on Sports Central, so probably a lot of listeners here for the first time. We have him on the Hogan Johns podcast all the time. We've had him on the beat here on WGM. But he'll join us for the first time on Sports Central. We'll talk a little bit about what's gone wrong with Wisconsin this year, what to look for tonight against Northwestern. But I also want to get him on the Brewers. How serious should the Cubs fans be taking the Brewers this year? And it's been interesting to see what the Packers have done over the last couple months. I think that they're going in the wrong direction. So I want to hear what Mike Heller has to say. We'll talk to him next here on Sports Central.
WGN. This is where WGN Sports Central lives. Streaming right now with your host, Adam Hoge.
Getting closer to the weekend, we'll have the first White Sox game on WGN tomorrow, Friday afternoon, a 2:05 start. We'll no official pregame in spring training, but if you listen to this show from 1 to 2, we'll get you the pregame coverage you need. Ed and DJ are going to join us from Camelback Ranch, and we'll get you ready for the first spring training broadcast of the season already. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Mike Heller on and talk a little Brewers today. Before we do that, though, there is a basketball game today between Northwestern and Wisconsin at Allstate Arena. Mike Heller hosts the Mike Heller Show in Madison, Milwaukee, and across the state of Wisconsin. What's going on, Mike? Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me. They're still playing that game tonight? Is that still on the schedule?
They are. In fact, I just happened to be by Allstate Arena earlier at the right time, and I saw Wisconsin's bus pulling in for what I assume was their shoot-around. So they did show up, And there is going to be a game tonight between Northwestern and Wisconsin.
Yeah, should be. They should play that game. Yeah, it'll be. So I don't know. You know, this is so weird for Wisconsin. They've been in the NCAA tournament for 19 straight years. You know, three Final Fours in that time. This is for a lot of kids. I mean, some of these kids on this team, they haven't been alive the last time Wisconsin wasn't in the NCAA tournament. So a bit of uncharted territory in the last two decades for this roster.
Well, and Mike, I've been struggling with that, just trying to figure out how much Wisconsin fans should be worried about the program. Because on one hand, we all knew this was a possibility this year, given what they had lost and how young they were going to be. But I don't think anyone thought it would be this big of a struggle and that they'd actually be below 500. So, I mean, what is the vibe in Madison right now? Greg Gard did a great job his first couple seasons in tough circumstances, but this has been a team that's really gotten away from a lot of the fundamental aspects of what we saw from Bo Ryan every single year.
Yeah, I think it comes back to depth of talent is what the issue is in the current setup. They knew that when they lost Nigel Hayes and Bronson Koenig and Zach Showalter and Beto Brown, their top four scorers from a year ago, that was going to be problematic. And it is. And then they lose two players. Now, they're not their best two players, but they lose their starting point guard and a really talented freshman in early December, and they're out for the season. Their starting point guard is a true freshman who should be a two guard, and he's playing with one shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
His other shoulder is in a sling, and you know, so he's playing kind of one-handed. So if you kind of add those things together, there was going to be a bump this year, not this significant. The two injuries added into the bump have really cost them big time. Now, the spoiled fan base is worried, and they think that there's a problem. The rational thinking fan base, as I would prefer to call them, I think they understand that there are going to be bumps. And if you want to judge what Greg Gard is doing, what the program is doing, do it 12 or 24 months from now, not today.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's completely fair. So last week when Wisconsin beat Purdue at home, very emotional night. Frank Kaminsky night there. I tweeted after the game that I, you know, thought it was a little weird that the fans actually stormed the court for a win over Purdue when over the last, you know, two decades, that should be a pretty normal occurrence that you're used to. And I didn't think that just because Wisconsin is bad this year that should lower the standards in a game like that. A lot of people took exception to that. I don't know if you were in the building that night or not, but just what was your reaction? Is that something you guys discussed on sports radio in Wisconsin?
Well, of course we did. That is perfect fodder for sports talk.
I know.
To talk about standards for court storming and those who I think the interesting thing for me with the court storming is people that I agree with on just about everything, I can disagree with on this.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, I think you and I are pretty like-minded, but I would disagree just because I think organically in the circumstance, the people in the arena, and what we're talking about are students. Students don't care what happened 5 years ago. Students don't care that they've been in 19 straight NCAA tournaments. Half of them weren't alive, you know, when that run began. So in the organic moments of that game, in that setting, with the emotion of having Kaminsky and all those guys from the back-to-back Final Fours in the building, and considering this season and how it's gone, I didn't have an issue with it. And I thought it was organic. I didn't think it was, you know, if they did it against, you know, Indiana, who has not been great recently, or against Minnesota. But Purdue's been one of the great programs this year, so I didn't have a problem. But I understand when people don't like it, too.
Yeah, I think sometimes it, you know, it's almost like an admission that you're not good when you do it. I'm not saying that that's what Wisconsin did. And I also said, too, on this show the next day that I wasn't in the building. And I understand that emotions, when you're inside a building, things feel different. So if that's the case, I do understand it. One of the things I want to talk to you about today, Mike, when you're talking about Mike Heller from the Mike Heller Show in Wisconsin, the Cubs and Brewers are in Arizona right now, spring training getting underway. And I'll just tell you the vibe here in Chicago. The Cubs think they're really, really good again. They should think they're really, really good again. The fans feel like they're going to win the Central and at a minimum should be back in the World Series. I'm trying to figure out the Brewers because I think they're a pretty talented team too. I think we all agree they kind of overachieved last year a little bit and maybe arrived a year early. And I think the struggle there is to understand, well, does that mean there's going to be a little bit of a setback this year? Or with the moves that they made, should they be legitimate contenders with the Cubs? So how do you look at the Brewers right now?
Well, I think Cubs fans should be that way. I think the Cubs organization should be that way. On paper, they are the best team in the Central. On paper, they can compete with anybody in the National League to go back and play in another World Series. You know, it's just the great thing about sports is it's not just done on paper. And I think the biggest point of for Cubs fans to be emboldened is the rotation. And listen, most people don't know the Brewers' rotation. They don't know the names. They don't know the quality of the players that are in that spot. Most Cubs fans couldn't tell you the top two starters in the Brewers' rotation with Jimmy Nelson out. So, you know, Chase Anderson had a great year last year. And Zach Davies goes under the radar because he's diminutive and he doesn't throw hard. But if he can get through the month of April, when he gets to the middle of May, from that point on, he is really talented. And then Julie Chassin, who pitched with the Rockies and the Padres most recently, he would likely be third. Jimmy Nelson comes back to the rotation at some point. But I think where the Brewers are concerned, yeah, they jumped up to 86 wins a year ago when a lot of people didn't think they could touch 500. So that was a rapid step. And you know as well that I do that the line to success isn't always straight. It curves, it bumps, it goes up and down. So could the Brewers regress this year? I think they might have had they not gone out and done the deals for Yelich and Kane. I think the really interesting thing here is that they still haven't traded an outfielder. So that means that they've got Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain, who are going to play every day. You didn't go out and spend the money and the trade to get those two guys and then platoon at all. So if you've got that and then you don't trade Domingo Santana, who is one of the most productive players in the lineup a year ago, that means Ryan Braun is going to play first base. And I know he's there now getting some time, but what they haven't talked about is if they don't make this deal, there's no way Braun and Yelich are platooning in left field. So I think the Brewers lineup, if Braun is, 70% of the time a first baseman, offensively that lineup is really potent. And if Jimmy Nelson returns as they hope he does in the middle of June, the Brewers are going to be hanging around. I don't know that they can hang with the Cubs at the top of the division, but I think the Brewers will absolutely be in that wild card hunt again.
What was the reaction when the Cubs signed Yu Darvish?
I think the smart Brewers fans knew that they weren't going to get into the five-year $125, $135, $140 million range. And then a lot of people thought if the immediate impact there was, okay, now they pivot to Jake Arrieta. And I don't think they pivot to Jake Arrieta because Boris has asked more for Arrieta than what Darvish was going to get. So I think Brewers fans are a little disappointed that they haven't done the deal that would get them Jake Arrieta, that would have gotten them Darvish, that could get them Lance Lynn, that could get them Chris Archer. One of those guys that's out there. I think Brewers fans are a bit disappointed in that. I still wouldn't be surprised if they go do that at some point before we get to games.
So as we talk about teams that are rebuilding, there's always a point where you don't really have much to sell off anymore. Other than Ryan Braun, what do the Brewers still have left here to bring in more assets into the organization?
Well, they have five outfielders. Braun's probably not tradable. He has a complete no-trade clause, and I don't know who wants him. But they do have Domingo Santana, Keon Broxton, and Brett Phillips as reserve outfielders. They really have six outfielders for three spots. I don't know what Broxton's value is, but I know Domingo Santana's value is high. Brett Phillips is a very talented young outfielder, has the best arm in all of baseball from a velocity standpoint from the outfield. And they like him. He played meaningful innings for them in critical situations in September and was good. So that is a position of depth, and two of their top 10 minor league prospects are also outfielders. So I still think that they may do something from a position of depth, which is their outfield. And otherwise, you know, like I was saying before, the concept of Ryan Braun being a two-thirds time first baseman is significant from an offensive perspective, because if you ran Santana, Kane, and Yelich offensively as your three outfielders, and then you still have Braun in the lineup with Travis Shaw at third base, you've got a pretty good offensive lineup.
Now, I can't have Mike Heller on without talking a little bit of football. And I was watching the Packers' moves at the end of the season very, very closely. And I'm talking about what was going on in the front office and with ownership. And I texted you at one point because just in general, and this was a completely objective view and just a belief I have, when you start splitting up power within an organization, I think it just creates, it sort of just breeds conflict when things start to go wrong. Now, the Packers still have Aaron Rodgers, and I think as long as they have Aaron Rodgers, they're going to be a pretty good football team, because in football, the quarterback position can mask all. But I was a little bit surprised to see them split up the powers with Mark Murphy, Gutekunst, the new GM, and with McCarthy, who might, I mean, what's the view on McCarthy? Could he potentially be out of a job a year from now if the Packers struggle this season? I'm not sold that this is going to work, and I'm just curious what the reaction is in Wisconsin to what was a pretty big shift in philosophy with the Green Bay Packers.
I think the biggest excitement was twofold. One, on the move of Ted Thompson into a non-GM role. I think people were tired of, and Ted hadn't been very good in the draft lately, and it's always where he was, that's where he cut his teeth, it's where he was fantastic, and he's certainly better on the offensive side from a draft and develop than he has been defensively. So I think they like that. The whole power structure concept, I don't think many people truly get, because the Packers are the only non-ownership team in the NFL. So when a coach or GM in every other of the 31 markets, if they have to report to somebody, it's going to be to the owner. In Green Bay, that's never been the case. And now Mark Murphy, the team president, in the new division of power, Mike McCarthy reports to Mark Murphy. And Brian Gutekunst, the GM, reports to Mark Murphy. So he almost takes on a little bit of an ownership capacity in power. So that's a bit odd, but I don't think the fans really... I don't know how we see how that manifests itself from an on-the-field standpoint. The biggest change, Adam, is Mike Pettine, who's in as the defensive coordinator. And I think a lot of Packers fans were hopeful to steal your defensive coordinator in Chicago, in Fangio. I think that was one of the hopes. But Pettine has quite a pedigree, quite a resume as a defensive coordinator, and Don Capers' message had gotten tired. And back to the McCarthy thing, he got extended quietly during the season last year, so he has 2 years on his deal, but you know what that means. That means that this is the year.
Yeah.
And they'll either have success this year and then give him a five-year extension, or if they don't return to Super Bowl contention, then I think there'll be a parting of ways and a new head coach. And I like McCarthy. I like him a lot. I think he's underrated. But he's got 2 years on the deal, which is really one.
Yeah, and I like Mike McCarthy too. But, you know, we can tell you here in Chicago with John Fox, 2 years in the NFL equals 1 year.
Absolutely.
It's like a buyout at the end because you still got to pay him for the second. But rarely do you see a coach go into the final year of a contract by himself. All right. Thanks for jumping on, Mike Heller. Appreciate it. I will attend the Wisconsin Northwestern game tonight so other people don't have to, and I'll report back. All right,
All right, I'd appreciate it.
All right, Mike Keller in Wisconsin, the Big 920 in Milwaukee, and the Big 1070 in Madison. Appreciate talking to him. Always good to sneak some football talk in there as well. We'll take a quick timeout here, come back with some buried headlines. Got a load of them for you, including some fun Matt Nagy audio that just sort of dropped in our lap about 30 minutes before the show. Haven't heard much from Matt Nagy, the Bears head coach, and he showed up in a place that you just wouldn't have expected. We'll be right back on Sports Central. All right, hear the music. You know what that means here on Sports Central. Time for buried headlines. We kind of wrap up everything we haven't hit yet. Have some fun. Matt Nagy will talk next week in Indianapolis for the first time since he was introduced as the new Bears head coach in January. But about 30 minutes before the show started today, something came on Twitter, and it was, it's not an ad, it's kind of a, well, it is sort of an ad, but it's a promotional video to try to convince Amazon to bring their second headquarters to Chicago, and it's got a whole bunch of random people in it, people in the city that, you know, hold some stature, just talking about how great of a place it is, and we're going to bring you to the middle of it and just take a listen real quick.
Which will bring a lot of people, which will bring more opportunities for growing businesses like ours.
I think that we fit together like a glove and a hand.
I myself found a great home in Chicago, and I'm confident that Amazon will too.
There's so much room.
Wait a minute. The potential. That voice sounded familiar.
Matt Nagy, head coach of the Chicago Bears.
That's him. Matt Nagy's lived here for like a month. He's all in on Amazon coming here.
Matt Nagy.
So, that was the other part of this. Like, first you're just like, oh, Matt Nagy's in a weird random Amazon video. But more importantly, he says his name out loud. And this has been the big debate. Nagy or Nagy?
Matt Nagy, head coach of the Chicago Bears.
When he says it, it gives me no clarity whatsoever.
Matt Nagy.
Joe, what do you think?
Nagy.
That's Nagy, dude. That's Peggy with an
N. That's Nagy? I still think it's in the middle. It's definitely
Nagy.
It's definitely not Nagy. Like the Chicagoans say Nagy. But I maintain that this is a pronunciation issue, and I think his actual name, if we're being literal, is Matt Nagy. Not Nagy, but he's got an East Coast accent. He's from Pennsylvania.
But there's no word that we can give him to, hey, how would you say this? And then we would be able to tell, you know?
Right.
Because, you know, Paggy isn't a word or a name.
Well, if you're like, do your kids nag you? And if he was like, no, they nag me, I'd be like, all right. Then that's a pronunciation thing. You don't know how to say that word. Hey, I'm not opposed to telling people on the show they don't know how to say their own names. I told Merrill Hodge to his face at the Super Bowl.
Hey, can I get a doggy bag? No, you can get a doggy baggy.
Yeah. There.
Nagy.
When John Gruden left ESPN to join the Oakland Raiders, everyone was like, oh, they need to find a new Monday Night Football analyst, which is true, they do. But people forgot about the draft. John Gruden also did the draft. And guess who will fill in, and I love this. Kirk Herbstreit. ESPN announced today that Kirk Herbstreit will join the NFL draft coverage on ESPN, which makes a lot of sense. He sees these guys during the season. He knows a lot of them. He knows all the coaches. So he'll, first of all, Herbie is amazing, an amazing analyst.
Great addition.
I put him up there with Eddie Olczyk as, you know, top analyst in all of sports.
Absolutely.
So I like to see that.
Because I had flipped from coverage. I was an NFL Network basically start to finish.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah.
Not that Herbie changes it a whole lot, but I definitely want to see how he does over there.
Yeah, that'll give me the flip over. That's what ESPN wants to hear. All right, speaking of this Northwestern-Wisconsin game, this is from Teddy Greenstein in Chicago Tribune. Northwestern hasn't looked good in many games this season, but the Wildcats will look sharp Thursday on senior night. The school allowed seniors Bryant McIntosh, Scotty Lindsay, and Gavin Skelly to design the game's Under Armour uniforms, which will be white with light gray pinstripes. Why the pinstripes? Lindsay requested them because of his love of the Bulls' alternate jersey worn during the championship years, black with red pinstripes. Which is a phenomenal jersey. I have a Jordan 1.
I have a Rodman 1.
That is a great jersey. Other touches include the four stars of the Chicago flag, a silhouette of the Chicago skyline, the signatures of the seniors with an ace of spades, and the Northwestern purple stripe angled up to, quote, symbolize the upward trajectory of the program. Northwestern, 15-14, has had a downer of a year, but the Wildcats hope for a rebirth next season in the renovated Welsh Ryan Arena. The Wildcats host 13-16 Wisconsin, 6 p.m. Thursday at Allstate Arena. Game right here on WGN.
Nagy.
Telling you, man. I'm calling him Matt Nagy. I don't care. All right, this is from Deadspin. Dutch speed skaters apologize for jubilantly tossing giant replica medal at fans. The Holland House is the place to be for the Pyeongchang Olympics if you're Dutch. It has concerts, drunken revelry, appearances by medal-winning Dutch athletes, and possible minor head injuries. Speed skating quartet. You know what? I'm sorry. I'm not even going to bother with the name. Names. There's four of them. I apologize. Attended a party at the house last night to celebrate their bronze medal in the team pursuit race, and they overenthusiastically tossed a big honking replica medal into the crowd, injuring two spectators. Two women were treated for injuries, and according to The Telegraph, one of them was taken to the hospital. Here was the team's translated apology at our homage last night at the Holland Heineken House. Classics sponsor. Two visitors were injured, which we also find very regrettable. And immediately after this incident, we contacted the two ladies who won the big medal from the stage to the public to make sure they've got their heads.
And asked them if they had any Heineken before the
right.
Fake medal was thrown up there.
There was a crazy story on ChicagoBears.com today. Did I miss this in the last couple days? Larry Mayer, our buddy, ChicagoBears.com, writing, former Bears safety Doug Plank is counting his blessings after being involved in a nasty one-car accident at about 2 a.m. Saturday on Interstate 17 near Flagstaff, Arizona. After filling his tank with gas while driving from Denver to his home in the Phoenix area, Plank lost control of his pickup truck on a patch of ice while merging back onto the highway. As I was accelerating, I just felt like the back end of the pickup truck I was in began to lose control of it, and it started going sideways. I realized there was really nothing I could do at that point in time other than just ride it out. A driver behind him reported that Plank's truck rolled 8 times before coming to a stop just off the highway. The former Bears safety sustained 8 broken ribs, a compressed lung, and lacerations that required more than 40 stitches. But he knows it could have been much worse. I thought I was going to die, said Plank. I'm serious. I thought I was going to die. You start thinking about your life, your family, your kids, all that. I really didn't need that experience in my life to feel like I was going to die. I survived with some injuries, but I look at what the other possibilities were, and I just feel extremely lucky. Doug Plank's done some work here on WGN in recent years.
That's the first I've heard of it. I didn't hear that at all.
I mean, that's a serious deal. Happy that he's okay. That sounded like it could have been a lot worse. That story went on to talk about how, like, the rest of the truck was crunched. And it's kind of, like, Doug said that if anybody else had been in that car, he probably would have died. And he was just lucky that he was sitting where he was.
Yikes.
We're a little short on time, but I wanted to share this story, heartwarming story, real quick. But there's a woman, Jordana Judson, who lived in New York, and one of her friends was killed in the Parkland school shooting, a family friend. She immediately rushed to the airport. This is from the Washington Post. I'm kind of speeding through it, but she immediately went to the airport at LaGuardia to try to get on a plane, and she was standing there crying, and two New York State troopers approached her just to make sure she was okay. She kind of told them what was going on. She went to buy, they took her to the ticket booth to try to buy a ticket. It was going to cost $700 and she couldn't afford it. So she started crying more. The two police officers pulled out their wallets, handed the ticket agent credit cards, paid for her ticket to Florida. State Trooper Robert Troy and New York State Trooper Thomas Karencinski. Great gesture from them in a very tough time. And I think the airline, yeah, according to the story, the airline also lowered the ticket to $600. So it sounds like they were each out $300 in getting her to Florida. I just want to share that to end the show today. We got to get out of here. Fun show. Mark Carman, Mike Heller, thanks to them for joining us today. We're still going to get to the bottom of Matt Nagy. Maybe at the combine next week, I'm just going to have to make him go through it. We screw up anything today, Joe?
Nope. Show was perfect.
That's like three in a row.
Yeah, we're doing a good streak.
I'm starting to think you're lying to me.
Caught.
All right. We're back tomorrow. Sort of a pseudo White Sox pregame. The first White Sox game on WGN tomorrow, 2:05. We'll take you right up to the first pitch. Ed Farmer, Darren Jackson will join us here on Sports Central. We'll talk to you tomorrow.